Good afternoon. The Senate Judiciary Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Monday, March 28, 2022. The time is 1:34 p.m. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Keel, Senator Myers, Senator Hughes, and myself as chair, Senator Holland. I anticipate Senator Schauer to be joining us shortly. We do have a quorum to conduct business, however. So thank you to Nancy, our recording secretary, and Alex, our moderator for today. And as a reminder, please silence your cell phones if you have them on board. So at this point, I will bring Senate Bill 34 before the committee. It's related to tribal and education compacting. Mr. Lampkin will take to the presenter's table in lieu of Senator Stevens, who's still on travel today, in case there are any questions that come up for us regarding this bill. This is the second hearing of SB 34. In Senate Judiciary, and at this point, I'm going to open it up to public testimony. Senate Bill 34 is open to public testimony. Does anyone in the room care to offer public testimony on Senate Bill 34? Seeing none, I'll check online and thank you. I do see President Kitka is available online, but she's just online for questioning. So seeing no one online, no one in the room, I will close public testimony on Senate Bill 34. Public testimony is now closed. I do have three amendments to consider for this bill. I will move amendment number one, labeled G1. Is there any objection?
I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Senator Myers. So amendment number one will change the deadline for the legislature to pass enabling legislation from January 31st, 2029 to June 30th, 2026. This will still allow a full legislative cycle in case there are problems passing the recommendations that come out of the negotiation, but it does set an expectation that the legislature shouldn't wait 5 years to enact. Is there any discussion? Do you maintain your objection?
I will withdraw my objection.
All right. So seeing no further objection, amendment number one is adopted. Then also before us today is amendment number two from my office. And once again, I will move amendment number two labeled G2.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. Amendment number two is just a technical fix. The current version makes it sound as though the tribe must know every other tribe that will participate in the negotiation. This language originally referenced a joint application, but is no longer relevant under the more open negotiation process completed in the current version. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, do you maintain your objection?
I will remove my objection.
Is there any further objection? Seeing no further objection, amendment number two is adopted. So amendment number three is by Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment three, labeled G.3.
Thank you, Senator Keel. I will object for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment three puts the obligation on the Department of Education and Early Development, the board and the commissioner, to involve school districts that would have a demonstration site within their district boundaries in the negotiations, just to have them involved from early on, and I think get a better result for all concerned.
I personally don't see a problem with this amendment, but I will maintain my objection for discussion. Is there any further discussion? Senator Hughes.
I just want the word consult just simply means that they're at the table for the discussion. It doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be part of the negotiations per se. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, to answer Senator Hughes, that this amendment doesn't give them a veto. The compacting parties would still be the Department of Education and Development and the tribe or tribal organizations. I do think that because we anticipate anything they agree to coming back to the legislature for enactments to make it happen, I think it'll be important to have the local district involved.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Thank you, Senator Keel. With no further discussion, I will remove my objection. Is there any further objection? Seeing no further objection, amendment number 3 is adopted. Are there any further amendments to Senate Bill 34? Seeing none, is there any further debate for Senate Bill 34? Seeing none, Mr. Lampkin, I appreciate you being here for Senator Stevens. Do you have any final comments?
For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. On Senator Stevens' behalf, he's grateful for this conversation that we've been having, and these amendments are agreeable and friendly to the overall vision of inclusivity and tightening up the timeline of this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lampkin. At this point, I will look to Senator Hughes for the will of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the committee substitute for SB 34 Education Work Order 32-LS0309-G as amended be reported from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Without objection, Senate Bill 34 has been reported from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes as amended. We'll do a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Senate Judiciary is back on the record. At this point, I will bring Senate Bill 214 before the committee. Senate Bill 214 is related to social media censorship. This is the first hearing in Senate Judiciary. Senator Reinbold, thank you for taking the seat at the presenter's table. And if you would please put yourself on the record and introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and honorable members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I am Senator Laura Reinbold. I represent District G.
All right. Would you please introduce your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I mean, a few of you have seen this already in State Affairs, but I'm going to go a high-level introduction. Basically, what Senate Bill 214 is known as the Stop Social Media Censorship Act. So basically, many of us have known or have actually been restricted, shadow banned, deplatformed, had lots of misinformation stickers slapped on our user area where we have pages. And so bottom line is 97% of the platforms are run by three different organizations, basically, so they have a big pretty close to a monopoly in the big picture. So a lot of times they're actually driven by a specific agenda, and a lot of people are very heavily censored if it doesn't meet, for example, the CDC agenda. If you're not exactly carrying that agenda, they might slap, you know, a sticker on the narrative, even though you're bringing something from a well-renowned doctor. They might slap a sticker on there of misinformation. And I have a special speaker presenter for invited testimony that may get into the details of the court case. But the bottom line, it did come out in court where they really weren't fact-checking at all. It was an opinion. So it was opinion versus opinion in the court case. So to me, that's very, very important that it's not really fact-checking at all. It's opinion checking. And that's where we really want to encourage within parameters, of course, and I'll go over those parameters, Mr. Chairman, if you allow me to go through the sectional, but in general, we don't want extremely large platforms and organizations that control a lion's share to be fact-checking and canceling out, you know, more of the little guy is basically what it boils down to. So with that, that's a very high level. I know this is an emerging area of law. There is no statute on the book that I'm aware of in the state of Alaska that directly deals with this. You know, guidelines, policies, there's no binding case law. So this is a new and emerging area, but I think because of the impacts that it is having, social media has really become an entity, that it is a discussion that we need to have. And I understand a lot of people don't want to take them on or don't want to talk or discuss this issue, but it is an issue that is impacting elections. It's impacting political speech, religious speech, et cetera. So I just think it's a really important discussion to have. And therefore, Mr. Chairman, if you're willing, I do have a sectional.
All right. Senator Reinbold, would you please proceed with the sectional analysis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is like I said, in Section 1, it's just the Stop the Social Media Censorship Act. Section 2 is basically legislative findings. And in the legislative findings, it says that these are things at a high level. I'm not going to read the whole bill, but I'm just going to read, is opposed to censorship of content unless it is harmful to minors or promotes human trafficking, except if it has a compelling interest in holding, you know, certain, the legislature has a compelling interest in holding certain social media platforms to a higher standard for having substantially created a digital public square. The legislature has an interest in helping residents, regardless of religious or political affiliation, to enjoy the free exercise of rights in this semi-public forum commonly used for religious and political speech. The legislature has an interest in preventing social media platforms having substantially created a digital public square from malicious interference in state elections. Section 3 goes into civil liability for censorship of the platform owners. So it's the owner or the operator of a social media platform may not intentionally fact check, delete, use algorithms, disfavor, shadow ban, or otherwise censor religious or political speech of the platform user. The social media platform that violates this section, actually there's penalties in that next section, B, C, and D, go into the different penalties. And then in section, it also puts the sidebars on the bill. It does not apply for deletion of censorship if the platform user's speech on social media platform calls for violence, self-harm, pornography, operational error, court order, inauthentic source or impersonation, entices criminal conduct, is harmful to minors, involves bullying to minors. And then G, section G is this section, bullying, harassing behavior are prohibited on social media platforms. A social media platform shall take steps to prevent bullying, harassment behavior, and shall provide a platform user who hosts pages or mechanisms to host and establish and enforce rules of decorum and prevent bullying and harassing behavior on the platform's user page. Then we get into the definitions of algorithm, hate speech, platform user, political speech, pornographic, religious, shadow ban. Those are all defined and defined there. And then G, it defines what a social media platform is. And Mr. Chairman, the only thing we did do one amendment in State Affairs, and I believe, Mr. Chairman, it was actually one of your amendments that we worked together on as a group. And the only thing we did in State Affairs technically to the bill was that one amendment where we redefined religious. Because I thought it was very important to keep the religious speech in there and the political speech because it's so broad in it. And social media really targets those issues heavily. It's something that people really enjoy talking about and expressing.
All right, Senator Reinbold, thank you for the sectional analysis. At this time, are there any questions for the sponsor of the bill? Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of them. So I'm looking at Section 3 near the top of page 2, talking about fact-checking. Wouldn't that interfere with the Alaska Constitution? The Alaska Constitution gives us a freedom to publish. And so that seems to me that if you're telling a social media company they can't fact check somebody, then you're telling them that they can't publish something onto their own piece of, I don't know if you want to call it application or software or website, but that concerns me.
Through the chair, it's an excellent, you know, issue. It's an issue when the Constitution, I think traditionally it was a newspaper, and the newspaper basically delivered content to your house. Mm-hmm. So that was delivering their content to your house. This is a social media. This is a platform. And the issue that I think I talked about it at a high level when I introduced the bill, but basically in the court case, they said that it's not fact checking, it's actually opinion checking. And I don't want to quote them exactly, but that's at a very high level. It was just virtually an opinion to an opinion.
Follow up? Thank you. But in this case, it doesn't matter if it's a fact or an opinion. It's whether or not you're allowed to publish it. And we're telling them they are not allowed to publish something on their own site.
So through the chair, I'm trying to figure out, are you talking about Facebook publishing something? Or are you allowed the user I'm talking about the social media platform.
And this, so Facebook as one example, if I post something and Facebook decides to fact check it and they post something underneath of it that says, well, no, this has been proven wrong or it's not completely correct or something. If you're saying that they can't fact check me, then you're telling them that they can't publish something on their own site.
Through the chair. So there's a whole bunch of different places that you can do. Facebook has a million options. That's not telling Zuckerberg. He can post whatever he wants to. You know, it's technically his site, and he does. I follow him, actually, on Facebook. So he can post. It just more that you are or I can be a user, you know, on the platform ourselves. And so they have a lot of different options where they can post wherever they want to. We're just saying you can't slap your opinion and put it on top of somebody else's opinion, basically.
Senator Reinbold, I believe in conversations you and I have had on this, and I think there'd probably be a solution for this. But so I think you would believe that a social media platform may not intentionally opinion check someone, but then they would be allowed to provide fact check, their own fact check information on a page in addition to or underneath a post or something like that. I thought you and I might have had a conversation on that.
I'm going to call for a lifeline, if you don't mind.
And who would it be?
The Heartland.
Well, I tell you what. Then what we can do is, you're welcome to ring them up this time if you like, Mr. Taylor, Heartland Institute. I was going to just go ahead and run through any more questions before to give him a chance to invite a testimony. But this might be a good moment to take a break and go to Mr. Taylor, if you would place yourself on the record, and we'll jump into any presentation you have to offer right now, and then we'll circle back to that question. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is James Taylor. I am president of the Heartland Institute. The Heartland Institute is a free market, nonprofit public policy organization. We're based in Chicago. We're national in scope, but we focus primarily on the state legislatures and state law issues and state policy issues. We have been following this bill in particular because this is an issue that people, your constituents in Alaska and elsewhere, they're on fire right now because they're feeling stifled for good reason in their ability to share information with their friends, their family, their colleagues. What you have right now is you have three corporations that control 97% of social media traffic in this country. And social media is the primary venue by which people share information, ideas, and opinions today. It's the 21st version of the town square. Now, what we have is these three giant corporations that control almost unanimously, almost as a monopoly, 97%, this information. These corporations, it's one thing if we're talking about them competing against each other for market share. But they did not create social media. Social media existed before Facebook. There was MySpace and Classmates, etc. These corporations made an effort to capture that that public forum and then utilize their power in concert with each other to stifle people's individual free speech rights. It's not a matter of competing against each other for who can create the best platform. Facebook dominated that. They created a great platform. That's why people use it. But now they're using their power that they captured in terms of the public square now, their power over the public square to stifle free speech. This is a topic that it appears everyone agrees on, that action, state legislative action here in Alaska and elsewhere should take place. First of all, at the grassroots level, your constituents, more than 20 million Americans have had their material blocked, banned, and censored simply just on CDC narratives regarding COVID. That's just one topic. When I give talks with the Heartland Institute, we address quite a few different public policy issues, pretty much the full spectrum of what you consider. If I give a talk, whether it's on global warming, whether it's on school choice, healthcare, almost every time when it comes to questions and answers from the grassroots, when I'm giving this public talk, I get the question, well, this is all well and good, but how do I get the message out? Because when I share what you're saying or what I feel, I get blocked. They won't let me share it. People want action. People have been demanding action. It's not just at the grassroots level. Legislatures around the country have recognized the importance of this topic. I believe the number is 37, give or take one or two. State legislatures have had bills introduced on this topic and are at some stage of the process. A couple of them have been passed. So we have not just your constituents, but legislators and legislatures around the country recognize the importance of this topic. Our founding fathers also have recognized the importance of protecting free speech. The Declaration of Independence, the very second paragraph, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. We have certain unalienable rights. Free speech clearly is one of them. Governments are instituted among men to secure these unalienable rights. We have free speech not because it's written in the First Amendment. The First Amendment merely affirms what we have as an unalienable right given to us by our Creator. Not only do the rights exist, but so do the threats. Oftentimes, government is the threat to our rights, unfortunately. But our founding fathers recognize that we do need some government because some threats do exist to our unalienable rights, including free speech. Here we have a monopoly or near monopoly, three corporations that control virtually all social media speech, and they are using their power to stifle our unalienable free speech rights. Finally, we have big tech itself that has gone on record saying, we want states, we want government to take action. You may have seen the commercials. Facebook aired one during the Super Bowl. They have commercials in which they themselves call for government action, new laws, new regulations, telling them what lines to draw. I have quotes here. I can read them for you in Q&A if you want. I don't want to go on too long. But they've also published papers in which they say that, look, what we have right now is government has not taken enough action, the laws are antiquated, and it's because government does not act that we are forced to restrict more speech than we would like to. And if you want something changed, go to your legislators, go to government. So they're pointing the finger at you. Your constituents are unhappy. Here's a good opportunity to address it. So this, and then just one final note, as I mentioned, or as Senator Reingold mentioned, we came up here. I'm here today because this is one of the bills that I think is particularly well drafted. When we saw that this was on the calendar, we contacted Senator Reingold and said, hey, is there anything we can do to help out, give you information? And that's why we're involved. So I applaud you for considering this topic on a very well-written bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. We'll circle back to that question real quick. But so you mentioned this is – you find this is one of the better drafted of the bills that you've seen on this topic. Can you get into a little detail on what you in particular like about this bill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The three things that stand out to me personally, and this is my opinion, but first of all is that there are statutory damages. If the point of legislation is to prevent big tech from stifling free speech, well, then there must be teeth to it. The fact that this has statutory damages is very important. Some bills do not. They simply say that you can file suit to force Facebook to correct their censorship. Well, it costs a lot of money to hire an attorney to challenge Facebook, et cetera. Facebook's not going to be deterred by that. Facebook, I say big tech in general. So that's number one. There are statutory damages, so there are real consequences for violations that Facebook and others will be aware of. Second is that this does allow for a private cause of action. In some states, it's only the AG that can, the attorney general, that can initiate a suit and that can sue on constituents' behalf. Well, you might have an AG that doesn't feel like really enforcing this this law. Sometimes AGs are like that. Also, if censorship is going to continue at the scale that it happens today, there are only so many resources that the AG's office has. So this, by allowing individual citizens to present their own case, is very powerful. And third, this is a bill that is concise and precise. It does not get too deep into the weeds. So it's something that is not going to confuse people as much as others potentially have the chance to do. I think it addresses the topic quite well. And again, this is just for information. You should vote your conscience on this. But in my observations, this is a bill that's very good.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Senator Myers, did you want to restate your question?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. So effectively, my question is – in the last Constitution, we give people the freedom to publish, which is an interesting way to phrase it as compared to the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. What I'm concerned about here is that if Mark Zuckerberg, we'll just use his name even though he's not technically the sole owner anymore, if Mark Zuckerberg wants to publish on Facebook a fact check, that underneath of a post that I create – that fact check itself is his publishing. And so if we say that you can't fact check, then that it seems to me that that's interfering with a constitutional right in the state of Alaska.
Through the chair, thank you for the question, Senator. And that's a very good one, because there are many details and intricacies that we'll have to flesh out. In this case, not having studied that portion of the Alaska Constitution before coming here, I'm from Florida. So Atlanta, Florida, they're kind of closer. I talk about Atlanta more. But anyway, I love Alaska. I'm happy I'm here. I would imagine that the right to publish is one that is not absolute, in the sense that what I mean is you wouldn't have the right to publish clearly defamatory materials. You wouldn't have the right to publish something that the theater's on fire and throw it in there. So the context of the right to publish would be important. In this case, what you have is, if you use Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, they deliberately captured the near entirety of social media platforms, user-oriented platforms. This is how people communicate with each other, not people giving them their opinions, not a newspaper editorial board. And in that case, if you're going to deliberately capture that, I would say that it goes with the turf that if you're going to get into social media, capture all of social media, the public town square, then you have to respect the fact that it's the public town square. By creating or issuing their opinions, there are many ways that Facebook and others can give an opinion. There are many places and ways that they can publish. And I'll note, just as a matter of consistency, Facebook and others, frequently when they give their opinions, they say fact checks. They claim that, well, we're actually platforms, we're not publishers, so we're held to a different standard. We get protections as platforms that they sought and that they take advantage of, whereas if they're a publisher, they can be held more liable for defamation, for slander. And we see some of this in the case of Stossel versus Facebook, where John Stossel is suing Facebook because they slapped a label on a video that John Stossel filmed with some scientists discussing global warming, and Facebook put a label that said partly false. Stossel said, wait a second, show me what's false. They couldn't do it, and they answered in court under oath saying, well, when we say fact check, we're not really telling people it's facts. This is our own opinion. So there are a lot of issues involved, and I understand where you're coming from. But I would say that they can publish their own opinions in many different ways and places. I would say that slapping a label right on someone's post is something that I didn't write the bill, but I understand and sympathize with where Senator Reinbold's coming from. Sorry that was drawn out a little bit.
Senator Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in Article 1 of the state constitution, in Section 5, it says the freedom of speech. Every person may freely speak, write, and publish on all subjects, being responsible for the abuse of that right. And so what we're trying to accomplish in this is as he said, 97% of the three corporations own 97% roughly of the content. When I put my page up, it says I publish it. I publish it under my name with my title or my name or whatever page, Constitution, whatever. That's I'm now publishing it. So I have to be somewhat responsible for what's published under me. This is different than a platform. The way that I look at what's going on in the country, just that it was a very big picture right now, is we swear to uphold and defend individual liberties. Your liberty, all of our individual liberties, okay? We don't swear to defend and uphold corporate rights. And the corporations in this case have created a platform for us to publish. We don't want the bully on the street to just squish all of us. So it's just, we're really just trying to defend, you know, when they have users on the platform, we want some sort of protections in there for those who have worked really hard, got an audience, have a forum there, to not have the CDC or something like that to just decide that their opinion is different than yours, even though you have a very credible from a physician, let's say, and they just want to squish it and slap it, and then no one, you know, or a lot of people won't want to look at it because it's got that big old, you know, sticker on it. I purposely try to seek the fact ones out sometimes because I really want to see, you know, what they're trying to do, and it really is an opinion versus an opinion often.
Senator Q.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to follow up on the end of Mr. Taylor's response to Senator Myers, because I understood you to say the owners of a platform can publish their opinions in many places and ways, but it would seem that the bill prohibits them from publishing their opinion on their platform, which is an oddity to me. Can you help with why their ability to publish their opinions outside their platform is sufficient remedy to the government's restriction of their ability to publish their opinions on the platform itself?
Through the chair, thank you very much, Senator. There is a very significant distinction between a user-oriented social media platform than somebody that is publishing their own information, whether it's a newspaper, a blog, a website, etc. So with the advent of internet technology, with the ability for people to share ideas with each other, people don't gather in the town square anymore, or even so much in bars and saloons to share ideas. It's online and social media. So now that you have a very small number, three companies that have captured 97% of that market, and then once they've captured it, whether it's not just, of course, fact-checking, but censoring, blocking, and banning. But if we're going to focus on the fact-check, quote, fact-check itself, again, it substantially impedes upon what the purpose of social media is and the societal purpose, the societal values in being able to share ideas with each other without somebody coming in. For example, in the case of Stossel versus Facebook, Facebook says fact-check, partly false. And then when challenged on it, they say, well, we didn't say it as a matter of fact. It was our opinion, but we didn't tell people that. It has a very stifling impact on the free flow of ideas and information. And if they want to have their own web page, they can put up. That's fine. But again, this is social media. It's user-oriented, and I think that's the distinction. And it's a very good question.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my understanding of the purpose of a privately owned for-profit corporation is to make money. And that, I think, is where I may be having a difficulty with this distinction, because they also serve a interpersonal communication role that they should now be seconded to a government interest somehow in doing something other than making money. You mentioned, Mr. Taylor, the gathering at a bar or a restaurant. I can assure you that people still do get together at a restaurant and talk politics and opinions. And if you don't think so, come on to Donna with me next week. Donna's with me next weekend, and you'll get the earful I get. We have many small towns in Alaska where there aren't a lot of restaurants and bars. So in many cases, there will be just one or two. Should the owner of that restaurant or bar no longer have the right that I understand they now have, when they hear something they disagree, to tell their patron, I'm sorry, you're going to have to take that outside. That's not what we're talking about in here.
Through the chair, thank you for the question. And there's a few of them there, so I hope that I can recall them and get to each of them. The last one first. This is a bill that addresses online social media platforms. This addresses when the sole purpose of online social media is solely to share ideas that developed before Facebook or Twitter. So if you are going to capture the venue by which it's a primary venue, yes, people still get together and fight over the Thanksgiving dinner table and meet at bars and have discussions, but really this is a primary venue. This is the primary way in which people share ideas and information, as opposed to a bar, although people will go there and occasionally you'll have political discussions. The primary reason why someone sets up a bar is to serve alcohol. And although sometimes you'll get into political discussions, usually it doesn't, but even if it does, again, what this bill addresses is the primary venue by which people share opinions and the business and industry explicitly being devised for that. And that's an important distinction. So, yes, at a bar, if people are starting to argue about politics or whatever, the bartender can still say, the owner can say, hey, put a shoe in it. Regarding your comments about how the primary purpose we would imagine of Facebook and others is to make money, and problems regarding that. First of all, I will always welcome the Alaska legislature and legislatures throughout the 50 states to always be thinking about, hey, wait a second, is government putting too much of a check on individuals, on businesses, et cetera? Freedom is the answer. In this case, what we have, though, is we have unalienable free speech rights that our founding fathers recognized exist preceding the establishment of government. We have now the way that people share those ideas is through online social media. If corporations get together and after they've grown large enough to capture such market share and then decide, well, we have the power to do it. We personally believe in this type of political philosophy. We want to become a de facto unelected government as far as speech goes. Now, that's something they can't do. And especially in this case where these corporations have acted in concert, that's been established with each other. Facebook buys up companies if they start to threaten them in their market share. Oftentimes it said, well, you can start your own. If you don't like it, go start your own online social media company. Well, very few people have the resources to do so. Some of the legislative testimonies where I've heard from public citizens, 85-year-old ladies who say, I protested the wind turbine being built outside my house, and now that got banned and blocked from Facebook. I can't share that information. She doesn't have the resources to create her own entity, even if she did. We've seen how difficult that is to do. One final note in that regard about the ability to build your own competitor is, again, that what you have is these corporations. You saw it with Parler. They act in concert. When somebody came up to challenge them, you had Amazon Web Hosting Services block them. You had Apple and you had Google Play block the app. They've acted in concert to strike down any competition, and that's something that is problematic, not just on free speech, but also monopoly concerns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to proceed in another route, but I know I've gotten the last several questions. So let me.
And Senator Hughes has not had a chance to pose a question. Senator Hughes.
Yes, and it's somewhat related. And first of all, thank you for bringing this forward, because I have been temporarily banned, as my husband, as many of my friends, and I understand the purpose and the intent, and I appreciate it. I, as the Judiciary Committee, I'm trying to think, how can we make this work so it will be upheld in the courts? And when I think of the old-fashioned newspaper, if someone, if they printed a letter to the editor or a bunch of them on a topic, the newspaper editor didn't agree, they could write an editorial on their position. So they had a way to counter that. And so I'm just wondering, when we say that one of these big tech companies could indeed get their thoughts out, they have other ways, they could actually have a page where they state their things. It's the problem of, on the user's page, you know, shutting them down or putting the stamp on or making it so it's unavailable, that kind of thing. So what if, and I know people are pretty innovative, you know, when something happens, what would you think if, so someone, and let's just, there was a difference in opinion on COVID, for instance, right? And so you had some doctors on one side, some on the others, and the doctors who promoted early treatment were often being shut down or anything shared about them. So would this work if the doctor who was in one of these big tech companies, so the doctor who didn't believe in early treatment, their stuff stays up there. The doctor who is pro early treatment puts their stuff up there. They can't be blocked. They can't have fact checked. They can't say unavailable. And they can't do anything on that user's page. But in the algorithms where that post shows up, they could have their own post from their own page, perhaps be in the feed giving their opinion. That would be one way. It wouldn't be impacting that particular user, but it would still allow them to publish their opinion. And they could even, you know, have it in close proximity so a person could see and make up their mind. I'm just suggesting, and the reason I'm thinking of that, because I'm thinking also of some of the other platforms that are probably in that 3%, Truth Social and Rumble. And what happens on these other kind of platforms if someone is pushing Chinese propaganda, for instance, or denial of the Holocaust, that kind of thing, that who the owner of that platform, again, could have their own page, and then they, when that would roll through the news feed, they could have a post about the truth of the Holocaust, or beware of the Chinese propaganda or whatever. Would that be a way that would mitigate this to make sure that our courts wouldn't strike this down? I don't even think we'd maybe have to do anything with Bill, because social media could already do that. They just, what we're saying is they can't shut down the speech of an individual user, because I agree with you, it's a public square. It is our present day, modern day public square. So would what I'm suggesting work, so that wherever a platform owner is on the various spectrums of politics or religion or whatever, they could still have their own page that would show up in an algorithm, just as long as the user's information was left alone?
Well, through the chair, thank you for the question. So there's a lot to it to untangle. But basically, what the bill aims to accomplish from my reading of it and my discussions with Senator Reinbold is to prevent a large, near-monopolistic entity from stifling the sharing of opinions. That's why you have the threshold that the site has to have a certain number of subscribers before this bill, if it becomes law, would apply to it. And also, of course, when you're talking about algorithms and abilities for the platforms to give their own opinions, that's fine. What this bill, I believe, and certainly legislation in other states, what it aims to prevent is the suppression of speech. It's not aiming to prevent Facebook or Twitter or anybody else or any other entity, if they want to say, hey, here's our opinion. But when they either ban or block somebody for posting opinion, or when they put, if they put a fact check on it, and by the way, it's not just oftentimes a fact check, which in and of itself can be misleading, because it's their own opinion, could be wrong. But oftentimes, especially in the case with Facebook, with Twitter, what happens is this, and I'll give you an example. At the Heartland Institute, we have had allies who operate other news outlets and internet media that say, we are happy to publish the information you provide us in articles so long as it's not regarding global warming. And the reason why is, if we publish anything on global warming that does not comport with the United Nations storyline, which the current administration buys into, then what will happen is Facebook will slap a misinformation, partially false, like they did with Stossel. But not only do they do that, they say then what they do is they downgrade everything that we publish, because they say that we've published some misinformation and misleading material. So what happens is you have these tech giants, they're not only slapping a fact check, they're not only putting the censorship on you, but then they're punishing you in everything you do and your ability and users' abilities to share your material. Users then can't share your material like they otherwise would. So that's the long answer. The short answer is yes, let them publish whatever they want in a manner that does not stifle our unalienable free speech rights in the primary venue in which ideas are shared.
And the follow-up?
Follow-up, Senator Hughes.
So, and thanks for the additional information about them changing the algorithm so that person, that doesn't seem good either. So, but what I'm suggesting as a way to ensure they could continue publish, if they're not going to be able to do anything to the user's speech, can't do it on the user's page, but there's nothing in this bill that would stop them from having a post that would show up in people's news feeds showing the other side of the issue. So in the same regard, like Rumble or Truth Social, if they can't stop like a Chinese propaganda post, they would be able in the news feed to have something that says, beware of this, this is the truth on this subject. Because we have to think of this all the way around, right? So you can't just think that it's certain big techs that are shutting down, for instance, conservative speech. We have to make it work all the way around. So I was asking you specifically if what my solution was is permissible by this bill, which would address Senator Meyer's concern about our state constitution
about publishing. It's not to the user. It's not slapping anything on them. It's just their own post that would run in the feed. Is there anything in this bill that would prevent that? And do you see that as a solution to take care of our state constitutional issues, which Senator Reinbold read to you that section?
Through the chair, thank you very much, Senator. And we always, of course, should be cognizant, mindful, and attentive to our constitutional protections and guidance. In that particular case, Senator Reinbold may have a better answer than me because she is the one who drafted the bill. I can tell you that in my reading of this, I would not understand there to be a prohibition against, whether it's Facebook or whoever else, presenting their own points of view to show up for people. But again, that's my reading from afar without really looking into that particular question beforehand. But that's how I would see it at the surface. And Senator Reinbold may have more information.
Senator Reinbold?
Okay, so I'm gonna back up just a little bit, if you don't mind, first, and then I'll drill down onto the question. We did get a memo from Ledge Legal that does talk about a lot of the concerns that you guys are, and Mr. Chairman, if you want me to get that, I did submit it as an official record as part of State Affairs, so it is part of the documents already. But just at a high level, I want to tell you guys that I had this bill drafted, or it was drafted in 2019. I was working on it. I was actually cleaning my desk, and I found, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot to, you know, submit this. So it is back from 2019. A wonderful staffer helped me with this bill. But anyway, the reason why I decided to go ahead and bring this forth, that I thought it was, so I don't want policy set in the courts. To me, that's very, very important. We are the policy setting. We are the legislative branch. And I think it's our duty to set the policies. So that to me was really important. And in this memo, I'm just going to read what it says at a high level. There's several things addressing your issues, and I'm happy to drill down in a minute on those. But it says, first of all, it's not clear that Alaska court would have personal jurisdiction over a social media website. They may dismiss the case because this is an emerging area of law, and it's kind of a big deal. And then on the very first part of the legal memo, it talks on because social media websites are private entities and not government actors, it gets in they may have free speech protections. Where the difference is there's the platform and the publisher. And if you set up a page, you are the publisher. You are now responsible for publishing. And so what we don't want is the people like an authoritarianism, tyranny, bullies, just slapping just their opinion, like just the CDC, let's say, on top of everybody. So what the bill does is they can sponsor, they can advertise, they can publish. You know, Zuckerberg can publish his opinion all day, you know, and all the people that agree with him, they have just the same opportunity for the exchange of ideas. You know, maybe you are really strong about, you know, we take an oath to the Constitution protecting individual liberties. So to me, I just want to make sure that these guys who are potentially selling our data, making billions of dollars potentially, all of that, they can't also be the person that wants, give me all the free speech protections, and then they turn around and actually crush the individual user's speech. So that's where the dichotomy is right now that we have to separate out. And I hope I semi-answered the question. If I didn't, if you could clarify, maybe, because it was a long, you know, comment, and so I want to make sure we got the.
Well, I think it is, and I think the solution I'm offering, I'm curious what Senator Myers thinks. Because this bill is saying they can't censor users. This bill isn't saying we're going to censor what platforms can say. They can still say whatever they want, just not on a user's post. Not so. I think it would work. So that's. Thank you.
All right, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the answer to Senator Hughes' suggestion is contained in the bill. That would be using an algorithm to disfavor a platform user. So I think the bill does prohibit that. I guess the follow-on question to my earlier questions about compelled speech and about public forums, it is interesting, this evolving notion of social media platforms as free speech, and that the percentage of use is what we ought to use to determine whether you can compel a publisher to speak or refrain from speaking in their own business. Back in the 50s and 60s, American members of the Communist Party were very upset they couldn't get their viewpoints published in mainstream newspapers. But the owners of mainstream newspapers had no interest. So we have one newspaper published here in the capital city. It certainly doesn't have 5 million viewers. So I presume that it is the viewpoint, and I don't know whether the sponsor wants to answer this or Mr. Taylor, that if my constituent in the back of the room felt like writing a letter to the editor of the Juneau Empire saying scurrilous things about my opinions and my parentage, the Empire could be compelled to print that, whereas they have not been compelled to print those viewpoints before?
Through the chair, thank you for the question. It's a very good one, and there are a couple points to keep in mind here. This bill applies to user-oriented, the purpose being user postings of material platforms, not newspapers. Newspapers is when somebody posts their own reporting of the news and opinions if they want. It applies to social media that's user-oriented. Secondly, there already is, under federal law, there are protections that social media platforms can, at their discretion, they can censor, block, and ban material that's sexually obscene, excessively violent, or personally harassing. So somebody that's going to harass and harangue you on that type of scenario that you described, well, then the social media platform would still have the ability to say enough is enough.
Mr. Chairman, that
follow up?
Thank you. That actually takes us maybe into the language of the bill. There are some definitions I didn't see, or some terms used that I didn't see definitions for. I would be interested in the sponsor's understanding of what the definition would be of content that is harmful to minors, and what would be bullying and harassing behavior on a social media platform. Those don't appear, I think, in the definition section.
This is when I'm not sure if the Lifeline is on. I don't know if Ledge Legal is on, but my understanding is bullying and harassing is already in statute at this time. And then I did bring, and he knows it as well, some of the federal issues in regards to the Decency Act. They are defined under the Decency Act on the federal level.
And I will confirm Ledge Legal is not online at this time. We could call them up if we try to get them on before the end of the meeting if it was necessary. Senator Keel?
I think a follow-up would be fine, Mr. Chairman. It doesn't necessarily have to be right here at the moment. The other question I had was if the intent of the bill is to treat these private for-profit social media companies as public squares and to sort of take them over for that purpose by government. Why are no protections given to the speech of anyone under the age of 18 in those public squares?
Can you repeat the question? I couldn't write it down fast enough.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. I'll try and be a little more brief. You can't put any more restrictions on a 17-year-old on the street corner than you do on a 19-year-old on the street corner in terms of their speech. But under the bill, you can. You're not protected by the bill until you're 18. So the question is why.
I'm actually not reading that into the bill, so I'm trying to figure out exactly what point of the bill are you referring to.
Can you identify which part of the bill, Senator?
Mr. Chairman, the bill generally provides its protections to platform users, and at page 3, line 14, a platform user is an individual over 18 years of age.
Through the chair, having not drafted the bill, I will note that my understanding, and against my understanding without having looked into it, but as a father of two daughters, is that under the age of 18, I believe you need to have parental consent to have such a Facebook page. I could be wrong, but that's my understanding. As far as just one other note in your question, and again, that would be if it is something that is potentially problematic, then hopefully it would get worked out in the process. But just one other note, when you mentioned that you used the term public takeover of social media, I would hesitate to call it that. It's simply saying you can't restrict people's free speech rights. So that's not taking them over. It's simply saying if you're going to make it a point to get involved in and capture online social media, then you have to respect the fact that this is online social media. This is how people communicate. They could set up whatever platform they want. They can compete with their people, with other businesses, however they want. All the mechanisms and intricacies of running a business, they can do whatever they want as long as they're not stifling people's unalienable free speech rights. So I wouldn't call it taking over. It's simply protecting our rights there.
Mr. Tamayo.
Senator Reinbold.
And an additional comment in regards to that as well. I think where you prefaced the entire question that I couldn't write fast enough was if the intent of the bill is XYZ. Well, whatever that was, it was not the intent of the bill, and I think he addressed that. So that's what I was trying to get out of the way first. But I was also, in regards to the Facebook, I was trying to do this, but I set my page up so long ago, but there's an agreement, a terms of use, where when I set my page up, I have to agree to a broad terms of use, and I'm not sure if that's where Facebook, you know, does the where you have to be of a certain age to actually agree to these terms of user, but I need to follow up in regards to that because it is an important question, but I think that's where it may be going in regards to your question.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. Senator Myers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I want to pick up on a little bit of a previous line of questioning. We're talking about social media sites being the new public square. They're providing the new public square for discussion, whether you compare that to a newspaper or a couple of guys chatting in a bar. So effectively, we're arguing that it is wrong for somebody to stifle speech in the public square. Is that correct?
Largely so, yes, through the chair.
Okay.
With parameters, because there's bookends on it.
Okay.
And they're identified at a high level in this bill.
Okay. So would a comment section also qualify as the public square?
Through the chair, on a social media platform, my understanding is, and by the way, I commend you on the question. These are questions that often aren't asked. So if it takes me a moment, you're asking areas that others don't, and it's good that you do.
That's the problem with emerging.
Yes, it is. We're going to try to get it right. That's good that we're all trying to get it right. Social media platforms, by definition, have comment sections by and large. On Facebook, if I post something, somebody can post something back and comment on it until and unless maybe I block that person, which, again, it's my post, my page. If one of the social media platforms, Facebook or someone else, wants to have a general comment section, hey, whether it's COVID issues, whether it's global warming, and we can all comment, certainly there'd be nothing wrong with that. I can tell you that I personally, I've had my Facebook pages, and sometimes I post things about public policy, sometimes I post things personally. I have friends going back from elementary school as well as people who I meet in settings like this. And every now and then, somebody who's been a longtime friend of mine going back to grade school will say, well, and get all snarky, and because they disagree with my political opinion, and so I can block them. It's up to the user. It should be noted that in Section 230 of the Federal Communications Decency Act, which was the legislation that first addressed this topic, and what, you know, giving big tech and social media platforms the ability to censor sexually obscene material, excessively violent material, etc. Congress did mention in its findings that the purpose of the law is to protect and encourage user decisions as to what information is shared and received, that the user would have as much control over that process as possible. So that is why it's very important to make sure that if one company is able to develop a platform that's very user-friendly, that people like Facebook, and then once they capture between them and two that they operate with, two other companies that they coordinate with, 97% of social online traffic, they don't take that power and then use it nefariously to shut down the very sharing of opinions that even Congress has recognized as so important.
Please do.
Okay, so I have a whole lot of thoughts in regards to this, but I think it goes back to whoever published the comments needs to be held responsible for the comments, because this is the right to publish, you know, bearing the abuse of. And if it's under, like, let's say your page, and you have rules on your page, because Facebook especially encourages political figures to have rules on their page to abide by, to help keep public forum, because you don't want to be responsible for a bunch of hate speech. You don't want to be responsible for harassment on your page. You don't want to be responsible for a lot of that. So I think it's really important to have a set of guidelines, and that's what Facebook recommends, and I have the whole guidelines that they recommend you do, if you're, especially if you're a political figure, of what you do in your about section on your Facebook page. So maybe that answers your question. Maybe it opens more questions. But I'm just trying to go back to the guidelines of what they've encouraged us to do. And I think we just had to do a 2-point fact, you know, authentication. I was just required. They were going to shut my page down if I didn't go and do exactly what they wanted me to do, and they did a check on it. I think all of us have to do that at this point. But there's certain things that they do make you do, you know, as someone that is a user on the platform. So.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. Follow up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think some of the comments that you both made kind of illuminate the problem here. We're not in the traditional publisher or platform dichotomy. We're in something in between here, because what I'm hearing is you don't want to be responsible for comments that are made on your page on Facebook, for example. And that's exactly what Facebook is turning around and saying, that they don't want to be responsible for comments that for posts that somebody made on their website. And I'm having a hard time with the dichotomy here, that it's okay for you and I to delete comments, but it is not okay for Facebook to delete posts.
Okay, so can I talk to this, Mr. Chairman?
Please do.
So it's really, really important. There's a difference between a platform person, the owner of the platform, you know, Facebook, that is making a ton of money, it sounds like, off of data mining on information and things like that. That's the platform. We are the user. We are the publisher on our little tiny sphere of billions of users here. So amongst that, you want a certain public decorum where there's rules on that page, where you don't want to be hate speech. I'm not saying any comment. You can. I know there's areas where you can unfriend, you can block, you can ban, you can, apparently Senator Wilson told me there's an area where someone can see what you're saying, but nobody can comment at all. So there's, and they keep changing. So it's just constantly emerging what I'm seeing different options for, but there's just, what we're trying to do is just deal with the platform. In this bill in particular, it's dealing with the huge platform in and of itself, in regards to the little page that you might have, just rules on the page so you can hold a public forum. They don't want, like, just in a courtroom, when you walk into a courtroom, there's like 100 different court rules. Those rules are important in the courtroom to maintain some sort of decorum. You still want it to be a free exercise of an interchange of ideas, but they have to be within hate speech, harassment, things like that, but more of a narrow perspective.
Mr. Chairman, if I can also address that, it is difficult to feel entangled by this, and that's because big tech has been inconsistent. When it's convenient for them, they define themselves as platforms, and when it's convenient for them, they define themselves as publishers. And now we're tasked with trying to entangle it and doing it right, and it's good that we're making sure that we do it right. In this case, what you have is social media platforms, user-oriented, user-controlled. Those are platforms. So Facebook, if they're going to capture and operate a user platform, it should be a user platform. In that case, as users, then users are controlling their own space because it is a user platform. This isn't Facebook's opinions. Facebook can have their own publisher business model. And, yeah, there's a lot of intricacies there. But, again, in this case, that the nature of whether it's Facebook or other social media platforms, if they ever can emerge, is to allow users to control their content. That's how users share information. And so what would maybe appear to be an inconsistency isn't, in the sense that, again, it's a user platform. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Senator Akil.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that's been a pretty consistent description. When I read the definition in the bill, though, if you've got a website or an application that allows people to communicate and you've got 5 million subscribers, so the comments section on the New York Times makes them a social media platform under this. WhatsApp would be a social media platform under this. I think there's a significant shift away from what's been described as the social media platform and a tremendous breadth to what's actually written in the bill. The question I had had to do with page 2 of the bill, kind of the heart of it, where it says a social media platform may not intentionally fact check, and I'm not real clear on what an unintentional fact check is, but may not intentionally fact check. It also says at the bottom of the page that that doesn't apply when something comes from an inauthentic source. How does a social media platform determine an inauthentic source if they may not fact check?
Can I speak to that, Mr. Chairman?
Please, Senator Reinbold.
First of all, with your permission, I'd like to read the actual definition of social media platform, because there's often innuendos and adjectives and things that really... This says a social media platform means an internet website or application that enables users to communicate with each other by posting information, comments, messages, images that is open to the public, that has more than 5 million subscribers and has been specifically and has not been specifically associated with a specific religion or political partner since the inception of the internet or application. So first of all, I want to just address what the actual definition is of a platform user in regards to this. And the second thing you said was about fact-checking. I'm sorry, where was
it? Just, Mr. Chairman, that because the bill prohibits a platform from fact-checking, but that doesn't apply if what's at issue comes from an inauthentic source. So how do you determine an inauthentic source without fact-checking?
Thank you for that clarification.
Can you just refer to the page and the exact line number,
please? Sure, Mr. Chairman. Both on page 2, it's the interplay between line 6 and line 31.
Line 31 talks about comes from an inauthentic source or involves impersonation.
Before Senator Reinbold answers, can
also I welcome Senator Schauer to the Judiciary Committee.
Sorry, not the point, but yeah, thank you. I just wonder if we could get clarification on answering before it might split into a strange rabbit hole. Because, and I just want to, that's why I'm asking for clarification before the answer. When it talks about the may not intentionally fact check, delete, et cetera, it says the religious or political speech. So we're talking very specific tenets here of this, not broadly speech or other things. So I just want to make sure that that's clarified in the discussion and the answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want to speak first?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, and thank you for the question, Senator. My understanding of inauthentic source would be someone impersonating someone else. So in other words, if I create an account and I describe myself as the real Joe Biden and I start posting all sorts of things that would create an uproar and be scandalous, that they can come in and say, well, wait a second, that's obviously you're perpetrating an act of fraud. You're an inauthentic source. So that is my understanding of what that is addressing, which I think would be legitimate. To a couple of your other points, the New York Times is not a social media platform. It's a newspaper. It's a publication. It's not set up, designed to, or has the effect of its purpose being everyone gets to communicate with each other. That's more like Facebook and Twitter. So that is why you would see, when you mentioned, well, then the New York Times would be forced to do this. They actually wouldn't, because they wouldn't fit that definition. One other point, you mentioned that the bill says may not fact check. The language is may not intentionally fact check, delete, or use an algorithm to disfavor, shadow ban, or otherwise censor the religious or political speech of a platform user. In this case, the way I read it, and Senator Reinbold can speak to that more, is here you're pointing out that you can't say, like Facebook did to John Stossel, what you said is partly false, and then you start downgrading his ability to share his information, or like here at the Heartland Institute, where people tell us, where you have Facebook now basically telling not just Facebook, but the entire media industry, you better not publish anything regarding global warming that challenges the United Nations narrative, or else we're going to use our so-called fact check to downgrade anything and everything that you post on any other topic. So my understanding is that would be what this bill would, for good reason, be hoping to address.
Senator Reinbold?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, they're mixing. Line 31 is very different than up on line 6. On section 0968.055, civil liability for the censorship of speech by a social media platform, except as provided in section G of this section, the owner or operator of a social media platform may not intentionally fact check, delete, use algorithms, disfavor, shadow ban, or otherwise censor the religious or political speech of the platform user. So once again, you must look at the difference between the operator, though, that's operating the Facebook platform, and the user. And then if you go down now to section F, that section F that covers 31, this section does not apply to the deletion or censorship of a platform user. So there's very, very distinct difference between the user. Now the user, if they call for immediate violence, of course the platform owner can ban that. If they calls for self-harm, they can ban that. If it's pornographic, that the owner or the operator can ban that. It goes court orders, etc. So it does give parameters where the owner, it deals with the deletion or censorship of a platform user that is doing bad, or things that people might consider bad on it. So it's very, very important to distinguish the difference between the ownership versus the user.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. I believe Senator Hughes, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, well, it's in relation, I think on page 2, the word up on line 6, fact check, we probably need to define fact check. Perhaps in the bill would solve the problem, because when we're trying to figure out if someone's impersonating Joe Biden, they are going to have to do a little checking around. That kind of fact checking would be permissible. So up in line 6, when we talk fact check, we're talking about when they slap that fact check thing on a user's post. So we probably need to clarify that in definition. Then on page 4, New York Times, I could understand where Senator Keel is kind of seeing where New York Times could kind of fit this description because of the prolific commenters under the article. So the way to fix that is to work into that definition something about that the primary purpose of the internet website or application is to enable users to communicate with each other. So that becomes a primary purpose, where the New York Times primary purpose isn't for users to have conversations. It's to get out the news. So I think that that's a friendly suggestion to the sponsor, just so we're not in capturing online newspapers.
Right. Mr. Chairman?
If I tell you, we're probably about to wrap up this line of discussion on the bill, and I just wanted to, if you want to use this opportunity for some closing comments on it, Senator Reinbold, or I'll go first to Mr. Taylor. Mr. Taylor, do you have any closing comments?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, I applaud the committee for taking up this topic, and really your constituents are crying out for something to be done. The questions that get to making sure that this bill is precise and meets its purpose, those are good to entertain, and I sincerely hope that discussions and talks will solve any of those issues. But people are crying out. I mean, trust me, I see it everywhere. You probably see it too. So thank you for taking this up, and thank you for having me here today.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. As a sponsor, Senator Reinbold.
Thank you as well, Mr. Chairman. I just want to point to two things. on line 31, page 2, just to answer Senator Keel's. Another thing, an authentic source, one, I've had impersonations even on Twitter. So that's a big deal, and also trolls. When something about me gets published in the New York Times, all of a sudden thousands of bots, some sort of, it seems they're not to be real persons behind it. They're more like trolls. They just come and descend on my page. So to me, it's really important if you have something, you need to be an identifiable person. I think trolls is one thing we're potentially looking for in regards to that line. But I think now that Senator, the vice chairman is here, I think it's really important to note that one of the reasons that we brought this bill forward now is election season is upon us soon. And it's just the legislative finding is that we have an interest in preventing social media platforms that have substantially created a digital square to stop, you know, to help prevent the malicious interference in state elections. This is something there's been some research shows that they have a pretty significant pull, not only in regards to this is separate, but Google, you know, and how they put things online and certain people get more positive things first and second, but in regards to the actual social media influence free speech. And so two of the most important things about the bill was to protect religious speech and to protect political speech as well, and not have an agenda of politically driven to shut out in regards to state elections. It's very, very important. And with that, I really do want to thank him for flying. It was out of the blue. I didn't call them. They called me, and it was just a real honor. And it is a new and emerging area of law, but I think it's something where we as a legislature need to set the policy. That's why I think it's very important that we get something like this to the Senate floor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. At this point, thank you, Mr. Taylor. Thank you, Senator Reinbold. At this point, we will set Senate Bill 214 aside for further discussions, and we will now bring House Bill 157 before the committee. Thank you again.
You know, there is say it on the record, that there's a thing we can add to this potentially that would fix the impersonation part.
All right. I will now bring House Bill 157 before the committee. It's related to APOC reporting for referenda and recall contributions. This is our first hearing in Senate Judiciary. I appreciate Representative Rasmussen joining us for this for this presentation. Thank you for coming to the presenter's table. Please put yourself on the record and introduce your bill.
Yes, thank you. This is Representative Sarah Rasmussen representing the Sand Lake area in Anchorage. I'm here with my staff, Crystal Kahneman, and just wanted to thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for hearing our bill. House Bill 157 will require the reporting of certain campaign finance activity earlier in the process. There's currently a loophole that allows groups to create and launch campaigns aimed at changing major policies impacting our state's future or efforts to remove elected officials from office without releasing financial information until very late in the process. The proposal would require disclosure of contributions and expenditures made to influence a referendum or recall election to an earlier point in the statutory process, as well as reporting of certain campaign finance activity prior to the collection of signatures. Alaskans deserve an honest, transparent process and have the right to know who is behind any effort to try and impact our state's political and economic future. And House Bill 157 closes that loophole that could easily be exploited by dark money special interests. And I will have my staff, Crystal, go into more detail on the bill.
Crystal Kahneman, if you'd put yourself on the record and walk us through the sectional analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Crystal Kahneman, staff to Representative Rasmussen. Section 1 of the bill modifies AS 1513-010B, which relates to the applicability to state election campaigns. It adds language that states the chapter applies to contributions, expenditures, and communications that are made to influence the nomination or election of a candidate and for the purpose of influencing a ballot proposition or question or for supporting or opposing initiatives, proposals, recalls, or referendums. Section 2 of the bill removes the requirement for an APOC office to be located in each Senate district. It calls for a central office. Right now, the requirement says all 20, and we haven't ever had one in all 20 Senate districts. So APOC has asked if we could clean that language up to remove that requirement for them. Section 3 is another request by APOC. It removes the word all from the phrase examine, investigate, and compare all reports, statement, and actions required by this chapter. It just gives them a little bit of flexibility and hopefully some cost-saving measures. Section 4 through 8 of the bill clarifies that contributions and expenditures are in a calendar year instead of left open-ended. That has been their standard practice, but because it says in a year, they wanted just to make sure that there was that clarifying language. Section 5 of the bill is registration before expenditure. This adds language regarding referendums or recalls to the statute that requires people to register with APOC prior to making an expenditure. Similar to what candidates do, this would now apply to the referendum and recall process. Section 6 of the bill is the contribution section. This adds language related to referendums and recall applications as to what is included in the definition of a proposition. Section 9, filing of reports. This rewrites the language related to those receiving or making expenditures to support or oppose referendums. This language is identical to that language that's contained in 1513.040K for ballot proposition reporting requirements, as well as 1513.110G for ballot initiative reporting requirements. Section 10 of the bill, filing of reports, it adds a new subsection K for those receiving or making expenditures to support or oppose a recall. This language is similar to Section 4 of the bill, as well as 1513.040K for ballot propositions, as well as G. So 9 and 10 are fairly similar. Sections 12 through 14 are the definition statutes. It modifies the definition of contributions, expenditures, and groups. This is the all-encompassing language to explain that they need to report during those referendums, recalls, and ballot initiatives have to comply with those statutes. Sections 15 and 16 are the publication of reports. It provides for the reports and archives of statements and reports to be posted on APOC's website, as well as having copies available at the central office. Section 17 repeals 1513.040K that recall applications are subject to group contribution limitations, whereas referendum applications are not. Section 18 is uncodified law that states that anything prior to this act is not affected. Anything after the effective date is when these reporting requirements would come into play. Section 19 states a January 1, 2022 effective date, so we will be looking for the committee to update that as that date has come and gone. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that's the extent of the section.
Thank you, Ms. Keeneman. I could say Mrs. Keeneman. You reminded me that you married into that name, so I'm going to guess it's Mrs. Keeneman. But are there any questions from the committee? Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in Section 6 of the bill, down near the bottom of the page, lines 29 and 30, we are excluding recall applications and recall questions from the reporting requirements and differentiating those between from initiatives and referendums on the one hand and recalls on the other. And I'm curious as to why we're making that distinction.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, that section deals with propositions, and so there is a difference between your ballot propositions, your initiatives, and your recall candidates, and so it's just very clearly stating what is included within that ballot proposition. That makes some semblance of sense.
Thank you, Senator Myers. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of relatively small questions. I think on the whole, it's a good bill. On Section 8, I think it may be the only thing that actually affects and you can correct me, please, where I get this wrong, a change in our limits. I think it used to be, before the bill, it's $100 is the maximum amount of cash in a campaign, right, so 18 months. And this would go to per calendar year. So hypothetically, you could take twice as much cash from an individual. Is that right?
through the chair, Representative Kayla, I believe that this lines it up with what was previously the $100 cash limit that individual candidates, to keep parity between candidates for the cash rule. Obviously, with recent APOC and judiciary announcements, that I believe may have been challenged, and I'm pretty sure that my staff can expand on that a bit.
Just pulling up the statute so I have it in front of me. Senator Keel, through the chair, my understanding is this is the way APOC has been interpreting this statute, because there is no date on here. They have been interpreting it as a calendar year, so nothing in practice that they are currently doing will be changed as a result of this clarifying language.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Chairman. Keel. And while I think limits on cash contributions are very important, because cash has a tendency to be slippery, I don't think the difference between 100 and 200 is a corruption risk. Another clarifying question. One thing I didn't understand was in Section 10, and it's lines 24 and 25, It has to do with a committee or a group, an entity, in support or opposition to the recall of a public official in a statewide election, or a recall application filed under, and then the references to 1545-480. Why list both? Because 480 covers the governor, lieutenant governor, is going to be statewide elections. I'm probably missing someone, but why list both statewide and?
Through the chair, I believe that this covered legislative candidates and statewide. There was conversation on the House floor about only applying this to statewide. We kept the parity for all statewide and legislative offices to have similar reporting rules.
That would be what I missed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Keel. I'll just let the committee members know that I believe we already have this bill scheduled again for next week. There'll be more time for additional questions if you have some extra questions beyond what you've heard today. Are there any more questions from the committee? Senator Schauer.
Thank you. Just very briefly, and we're going to meet, I know, to discuss it as well. One of the things I'll be looking for as we talk about is just, is there anything left that we haven't covered that I'd like to make sure before we go that, you know, from a reporting perspective, because that's, I agree with Senator Keel, so good bill, and we need this. So that's the last thing I'm looking for, is just, is there any areas that aren't covered that we can? Thank
you. Through the chair, this is Representative Rasmussen, and I appreciate that question. I think that there's obviously some areas that we can have conversation and make sure that we're not missing any important areas that need updating in the law. I would say that it may be appropriate to look at some of the reporting requirement dates. I know that individual campaigns have reports that are due right at the, I guess, middle of session when the House is working on the budget. And so after speaking with APOC, some of those dates may not necessarily be the most conducive for state business and still be able to operate in a transparent level while not interrupting the legislative session.
All right. Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. I'll just say for anyone who's watching, we don't mean to just give you 15 minutes at the end of the meeting. Our committee was working with your availability, and we knew this was mostly going to be the introduction of this bill to Judiciary Committee. Thank you to the sponsor and her staff for presenting this bill. Senator Hughes.
Just want to say really quickly, thank you. I had worked on a similar bill. I'm glad to see yours. I think yours hits it better, so I appreciate it.
All right. At this point, we'll send House Bill 157 aside. Thanks again for presenting your bill. Is there any other business before the committee? I appreciate everybody hanging around for a few minutes later today. Our next meeting is Wednesday, March 30th at 1:30 p.m. And today we are adjourned at 3:06 p.m.